Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Kahan, and I'm excited to learn Sefer Bamidbar with you. Today we'll be learning Parshat Chukah. This week's Parsha is one of the most tragic in Chumash, as we read of Moshe and Aaron's sin at Meriva and Hashem's decree that they not enter the land. Mefarshim have offered many interpretations of the nature of their sin. Abarbanel alone lists over 10 explanations. And while all of these interpretations are important and worth learning, the downside of learning them is, as Shadal points out, that we sometimes walk away from Parshat Chukah thinking that Moshe and Aaron did 15 things wrong instead of just one. I'd like to focus on a different aspect of the narrative of Meriva, on a theme which I think is central to understanding the fundamental message of the story and which emerges from literary analysis of Perek Kaf. Perek Kaf begins with the death of Miriam, described in the very first pasuk, and then tells of the lack of water and the people's complaint that triggers the events of Meriva, when Moshe and Aaron bring water out of the rock and commit their enigmatic sin, for which Hashem decrees that they will not enter the land. There's then a brief description of Moshe's negotiations with Melech Edom, and the end of the perek tells us about Aaron's death. The literary structure of this perek helps us uncover the theme that runs beneath the surface of the narrative. Perek Kaf is structured as a literary envelope, meaning that it begins and ends with a repetition of certain key phrases and ideas. The first pasuk says, "Vayavu b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edah midbar tzin b'chodesh harishon v'yeshev ha'am b'kadesh v'tamat sham Miriam v'tigaver sham." B'nei Yisrael, the whole congregation, came to midbar tzin in the first month, and the people dwelled in Kadesh, and Miriam died and was buried there. The very last pasuk of the perek says, "Vayiru kol ha'edah ki gava Aaron v'yivku et Aaron shloshim yom kol beit Yisrael." And the whole congregation saw that Aaron had passed away, and the whole house of Israel cried for Aaron 30 days. Both the opening and closing psukim of the perek include the phrase kol ha'edah, and both describe the death of a leader of the people, first Miriam, then Aaron. This envelope structure conveys the idea that the whole theme of this perek is the end of the first generation of leaders, through the deaths of Miriam and Aaron, and the gezeira of death against Moshe. For more information about this literary envelope and other literary devices in Tanakh, please see the Literary Devices Index at alhatorah.org, which identifies meaningful literary devices throughout Chumash. This literary envelope conveys more than the idea that this perek revolves around the story of the end of the first generation of B'nai Yisrael's leaders. Rabbi Sachs, in his essay Losing Miriam, draws a deeper connection between the death of Miriam and the story of Meriva. Rabbi Sachs writes, "But there is another question altogether about the episode we read of this week." Here he's referring to Meriva. What made this trial different? Why did Moshe momentarily lose control? Why then? Why there? He had faced just this challenge before at Mara and Rephidim. There was drama, tension, but nothing like the emotional distress evident in this week's Parsha of Chukah. Surely Moshe, by now almost 40 years older, with a generation of experience behind him, should have coped with this challenge without drama. He had been there before. Rabbi Sachs goes on to note that rabbinic tradition draws a connection between the passing of Miriam and the story of Meriva by explaining that the well that provided water to the Jews existed only in the merit of Miriam, and that after her passing it disappeared. Rabbi Sachs suggests another explanation, though. He writes, "There is, though, another way of reading the connection. Moshe lost control because his sister Miriam had just died. Moshe surely knew what he owed his elder sister. According to the Midrash, without her, he would not have been born. According to the plain sense of the text, he would not have grown up knowing who his true parents were and to which people he belonged. Though they had been separated during his years of exile in Midian, once he returned, Miriam had accompanied him throughout his mission. She had led the women in song at the Red Sea. So it was not simply the Israelites' demand for water that led Moshe to lose control of his emotions, but rather his own deep grief. The Israelites may have lost their water, but Moshe had lost his sister, who had watched over him as a child, guided his development, supported him throughout the years, and helped him carry the burden of leadership in her role as leader of the women." In Rabbi Sachs's view, the death of Miriam is intrinsically connected to the events of Meriva, because it was Moshe's grief that led to his despairing, desperate actions. I think that the literary envelope connecting the deaths of Miriam and Aaron to the decree of death against Moshe helps us understand Moshe's emotional experience at this point in his life, and also, on a deeper level, helps us understand how intrinsically Moshe's life mission is tied to his relationships to his siblings. In fact, one can only really fully understand Moshe's development and mission as a leader through the lens of his relationships with Miriam and Aaron. Let's begin by considering Moshe's relationship with Aaron. Moshe's first encounter with Aaron as an adult is found in Shmot Perek Daled, after he has returned from Midian to Mitzrayim to begin the process of redeeming the Jews. In that perek, we encounter one of the most enigmatic stories of Chumash. After Moshe is instructed by Hashem to return to Mitzrayim, he embarks on the journey with his family. On the way to Mitzrayim, an angel of Hashem attacks Moshe. As the Pasuk says, Vayifkeshehu Hashem vayivakesh hamito. Hashem met him and sought to kill him. Zipporah reacts by taking a stone and giving her son a brit milah, which averts the disaster. Immediately after this, we are told of Moshe and Aaron's joyful reunion. This is an incredibly rich and mysterious narrative, and we unfortunately are not able to unpack it all here. But in order to understand its significance to the relationship of Aaron and Moshe, I'd like to think of the story in broad strokes, and to compare it to a parallel story from earlier in Chumash. There are only two stories in Chumash that tell of an angel attacking a person, this one and the story of Yaakov fighting with the angel in Bereishit Lamed Bet. In fact, when one thinks about these two mysterious stories, many parallels emerge. Both are stories about a younger brother on a journey to reunite with his older brother, whom he has not seen in some time. In both stories, there is every reason for the younger brother to be anxious and to assume that there will be some tension, since he has in some way usurped the older brother's leadership role. In both stories, the younger brother has a physical encounter with an angel who inflicts some kind of bodily injury on him. In both stories, there is an association between the angel's attack and a mitzvah. In the case of Yaakov and Esav, we learn the halacha of not eating the Gid Hanasha, and in the case of Moshe, the mitzvah of Brit Milah is associated with the encounter. And there are also certain linguistic connections, such as the use of the root pagash, meaning to meet, in both stories. This root appears in both of these stories and nowhere else in Chumash. I think that what we learn from the parallel between these stories is that the deeper meaning of Moshe and Aaron's meeting and of Moshe and Aaron's relationship throughout the Torah is that it is a resolution of the pattern of conflict between brothers that has plagued humanity since the beginning of Sefer Bereishit, beginning with the story of Cain and Hevel. Aaron and Moshe's joyful reunion, and especially Aaron's selfless joy at Moshe's selection as Hashem's messenger, in contrast to the mistrust and sometimes subtle enmity that continually plagues the relationship of Esav and Yaakov, represents deep, authentic harmony within family. Not only that, but this harmony and sense of familial peace is a prerequisite for Geulat Mitzrayim. The reason that the story of Moshe at the inn and the joyful reunion of Moshe and Aaron are the very first steps of the process of Yetziat Mitzrayim is that Moshe can only step out onto the stage of Jewish history as the Moshiach Yisrael once he has brought redemption to his own family. In the Torah, the personal and the national are always intertwined. Moshe and Aaron cannot save the Jewish people until they first save their own family. Only once the animosity that has plagued families since the beginning of the Torah has been resolved can the nation be redeemed. Now let's turn to the relationship between Moshe and Miriam. From the very beginning of Moshe's story, he owes everything about his existence to Miriam's vision and persistence. The Gemara in Sota Yud Bet Amud Bet to Yud Gimel Amud Aleph famously tells us that when Paro decreed that the baby boys would be thrown into the water, Amram, who was a Gadol Hador, divorced his wife, and then everyone else followed his lead and did the same. Miriam challenged her father. The Gemara says, Amra lo bito, Abba kasha gezeretcha yoter mishel paro, sheparo lo gazar ela al hazacharim, va'ata gazarta al hazacharim va'al hanekevot. Paro lo gazar ela ba'ulam hazeh, va'ata ba'ulam hazeh ula ulam haba. Paro harasha safek mitkayemet gezerato, safek ina mitkayemet, ata tzadik bevadai shegezeretcha mitkayemet. His daughter said to him, Father, your decree is harsher than Paro's, because Paro only decreed against the boys, and you decreed against the boys and the girls. Paro only decreed in this world, and you decreed in this world and the world to come. Paro is wicked, and it's doubtful whether his decree will succeed, but you are a tzaddik, so certainly your decree will succeed. The Gemara goes on to tell us that Amram accepted Miriam's rebuke, and that he and all the other Jewish men remarried their wives, and Miriam predicted that her parents would have a baby who would redeem the Jewish people. Later, when Moshe was indeed placed in the water by his mother, the Gemara tells us that Amram slapped Miriam on the head and challenged her. Heichan nevuatech, what happened to your prophecy? This is why, the Gemara tells us, Miriam was motivated to watch baby Moshe by the water, because despite all the odds, she still believed in her prophecy and was waiting to see it come true. It is clear from this midrash, and also from the pshat in which Miriam watches over her baby Moshe and acts courageously so that his mother will be able to nurse him, that Moshe owes his existence and his connection to his Jewish family to Miriam. Even later in the Torah, when we see some tension between Moshe and Miriam in the story of Miriam's Lashon Hara in Parshat Vaalotcha, there are intimations of the deep bonds between them. In a sense, Miriam in that story is doing exactly what she did in the first story, in her interaction with Amram in the Gemara. She is standing up against what she perceives as injustice and giving direction to the people closest to her. The problem is that she doesn't fully understand that at this point, her brother is not only her brother, but a Navi who has eclipsed her in stature. Even in the psukim that describe Miriam's punishment for her Lashon Hara, there are hints back to her moments of greatness. Hashem justifies his punishment of her by saying, "Va'aviha yarok yarak b'faneha halo tikalem shivat yamim." If her father spit in her face, would she not be ashamed for 7 days? In other words, Hashem is saying that even if her human father had been upset with her, it would be appropriate for her to be punished or ashamed for 7 days, all the more so when she has acted against Hashem's wishes. I think one could suggest that this pasuk intentionally calls to mind the story in the Gemara of Miriam's father slapping her on the head, reminding us of that moment of her grandeur and nevuah in the context of this story of her disgrace. And when Miriam is ultimately inflicted with tzara'at, the people wait for her until she recovers, which Rashi points out calls to mind her waiting for Moshe by the river. In other words, even when Miriam acts inappropriately, she is still Miriam. She is still acting with good intentions, and her courage and greatness remain as chut for her. The relationships between Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe are fundamental to Moshe's entire life and mission as the Moshiach Yisrael. Moshe owes everything to Miriam, to her belief in him and her belief in the Jewish future, even in the very darkest times. Moshe and Aaron's unbelievable harmony represents the first necessary stage of national redemption. There would be no Moshe without a Miriam and an Aaron. The envelope structure of Parakaf, which weaves together the stories of the deaths of Miriam, Moshe, and Aaron, teaches us something deeper than the specific nature of Moshe's sin. It teaches us, as Rabbi Sachs said, that Moshe's actions must be understood in the context of his profound grief. This parsha is a reminder that for all people, including our greatest leaders, the basis of everything is our closest personal relationships. When those relationships are suffering, nothing else works either, just as Moshe's sin at Meriva was tied to his grief at losing Miriam. And when we achieve love and harmony and redemption in those relationships, we can also seek those things at the grandest levels, beyond our own families, just as Moshe's reunion with Aaron allowed him to become the Moshiach Yisrael. May our families and the whole family of Am Yisrael be blessed with peace and harmony, both personally and nationally. Shabbat Shalom.